I feel like that's what I'm here to do, which mm-hmm. is equipping Black people with the tools to deal with all this BS.
This week, my guest is the gentleman cartoonist, Keith Knight. He is a syndicated cartoonist who regularly writes about racism, police violence, and the real-world connections and nuances between the two. Now, he writes about most of these in two of his strips. One of them is K Chronicles, the other one is Think. But this week, a new show dropped on Hulu called Woke, which is an adaptation of Keith's life and his work, including his own run-in with police as an artist that was simply hanging up flowers one day in the park when he, quote unquote, fit the description. I also have some announcements about the Blurred Girl Live and a few places you might see my face pop up around the internets. And some thoughts on that Lovecraft episode. You know the one. But first, let's pay some bills. Do you run a hosted website on WordPress, or is your site really slow? Have you gotten hacked in the past and you just didn't know what to do? Well, if so, you need SiteGround. Now, I am a SiteGround affiliate. I'm also a customer. In fact, I switched theblurredgirl.com over to them and never looked back. In fact, I've put other people onto them for two reasons: reliability and customer service. You can try it yourself at siteground.com/go/theblurredgirl. That's siteground.com/go/theblurredgirl. Now, unlike some other hosting sites that have a really great affiliate program and seem to be really popular, many of them don't have customer service. SiteGround has great customer service. They don't talk to you like an idiot. If you can't find something, they'll help you work through it. They have a really easy control panel, and SiteGround is really the truth. You can start hosting your site today for as low as $3.95 a month. You can run a store, a blog, anything really. And they can even move your whole existing site over for you from another hosting service, and you don't have to worry about a bunch of code and stuff. So if you've been blogging or running a website for a while now, it's time to take your site and its security seriously and move up to SiteGround. Sign up today at siteground.com/go/theblurredgirl. In this episode, I am talking to Keith Knight, the co-creator of the new Hulu show Woke. But I also got a chance to talk to the actor who plays him, Lamorne Morris. I had an interview with him for Sci-Fi. You remember Lamorne. He was on New Girl, always with that cat. And he was also in Bloodshot, I think, which was the last movie that I saw in a movie theater this year. I also talked to his co-stars, Blake Anderson, T. Murph, and Sashir Zamata. Her name is not actually African in origin. It comes from Star Trek. Now, I know there's some Trekkies listening in, so if you figure out where her name comes from, hit me up on Twitter or in Instagram DMs, and I will let you know if you are correct. I'll put a link to that Sci-Fi interview in the show's description, so you can also check it out. Also, for those who missed my 8 weeks of season one of The Blurred Girl Lives, all 8 episodes, actually 9, I have a bonus episode with Black Girl Gamers, all 9 episodes are up on OSNYC, and I'm coming back with a season 2 in October. I have not announced what day in October yet, but it's coming. But you can watch every single episode over there on OSNYC, and I'm under their talk shows. So please check that out as well. I will also put a link in the descriptions. Also, there's a new convention coming in October called Afro Comic Con, and they currently are taking submissions for panels. They are a local Oakland area convention, and because of COVID, they're now going to be streaming their convention, but they're promoting... online right now, and they're taking panel submissions, but I think that closes on September 14th. They are also taking cosplay submissions for their cosplay competition, but that doesn't end till like the end of the month, I think. So you got to check out the Afro Comic Con Instagram to get those details. But hurry this weekend and put something together for panels, because I'd love to see what y'all are talking about and thinking about right now. Finally, I have not written or commented on my site about Lovecraft Country yet, but y'all know I'm a fan. I've been on several other podcasts talking about it, and I've been on the Geeks of Color Lovecraft Country recap show. I think I've done episodes 2 through 4, I believe, and on Fansided's Lovecraft Country podcast. I was raving about the show with them. And I'm sure you've seen me yelling about it on Twitter every week. But I would be remiss if I didn't comment on episode 4, The History of Violence. Now, my brief thoughts on that episode is that although Montrose drove me absolutely batshit crazy throughout most of the episode, the ending and the treatment of the indigenous character on that show was, there's no other word to describe it other than horrific. And the fact that a trans or at least non-binary character, I believe, sorry if I got that wrong, was treated that way at the hands of a black man was what made it even more frustrating. And on top of everything else, it did not further the plot. No one can tell me like, oh, well, it furthered the plot point. No, it didn't. And I'm frustrated because I think a very good show made a very bad move. But I will say more on that at the end of this podcast. My guest today is someone I've actually known for a few years, Keith Knight. Now, Keith is an American cartoonist and musician known for his comic strips, The K Chronicles, Inc., and The Nightlife. Now, while his work is humorous and universal in appeal, he often deals with social, political, and racial issues. The new Hulu show, Woke, is based on his life and some of the people in it. I have seen all 6 episodes, and I will warn you that towards the end of this episode, we get a little spoilery, but nothing too heavy. Woke is basically, to me, what happens when the white guy's best friend in a comedy gets his own show. But I'll let Keith explain it. Up next, my interview with artist, writer, and now TV writer, Keith Knight. I have actually followed the K Chronicles for years, and we talked about this when I think I met you, because it's originally what I was actually going to call my site. It was not going to be called The Blur Girl. It was going to be called The K Chronicles, because my name is Karima. And when I looked it up, I'm like, well, somebody's already got this name. And that's how I found K Chronicles. This was like, I don't know, 2013, 2014. And then I met you in person at the Schaumburg Black Comic Fest, and I think I saw... Yeah. I saw one of your books from like across the room. I think it was They Shoot Black People, Don't They? So I'm actually curious as to how much of the K Chronicles that I've followed has been or is featured in Woke.
There are bits and pieces of all my work in the show, but it's more the sensibility is in the show more than anything else. And so... If you've followed me for years, you'll recognize some of the things. If you've ever seen any of my police brutality or racial illiteracy slideshows, the characters break down in the pilot episode where he's saying all this stuff. You've heard that come out of my mouth before. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of small little things that you may have heard a few times in the strips. And then also... credit to Mo Marable, the director. He really wanted to incorporate. He had signs made up that were based on like sink strips and stuff. There was a sign that said, you know, this precinct has not shot an unarmed black man in over 7 days or something like that. And that's a sign that's in the background of a scene. There's all these little things. And, I don't even know if you can even see them like on the bus or on the back of the bus. Some of the ads, it's a lot of my sensibility in it, which I really, that's what I really love about it. People will see it and go, oh my goodness, like how did they manage to retain so much of you in there, you know? So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, it was very cool. And I did see some of those things. I feel like when they were going around, I've seen the whole season. I feel like when they went around and were putting up posters for the shirts, I feel like some of the strips and some of the images, I feel like I've seen some of that stuff there. And then obviously the things on Keith's wall, I'm like, oh, I recognize some of that stuff. Curious, let's go back a little bit farther. Where did you grow up?
Oh, I grew up in Boston. I grew up just north of Boston, yeah, in Malden, Massachusetts. Raised on you know, hip-hop, Warner Brothers, and racism. And yeah.
And you helped co-write the show?
I co-wrote the pilot, and yeah, I was in the writer's room. So, you know, I worked, on a lot of the scripts, but, it's interesting, you know, where it says, teleplay by a certain particular person. It really is a group effort. Mm-hmm. And, I wanted to be in the writer's room. I wanted to be on set. I wanted to be, it's one of those things where whenever I met somebody who sold something to Hollywood, you know, they would always just be angry and bitter about what happened to it,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it was out of their hands and then somebody just took it. So I want to make sure that if it was going to get screwed up, I wanted to be right there and be part of the screwing up, right? So there's no excuse. Like, it would kill me if it went off into someone's hands and failed and I had nothing to do with it. You know what I mean? It was exhausting to be a part of it,
mm-hmm.
Because I didn't move back to LA. I was in North Carolina, but I stayed. I crashed on couches and was in the writer's room. I flew back every 2 weeks. And then I was up on set in Vancouver and, you know, just every aspect of it, I tried to, you know, have a hand in, whether it's, you know, what the apartment looked like, what the characters, how San Francisco looked, what, like, who would be on the bus, who would be on, like, just everything. And it was just really, really fun to see it finally come to fruition, where, you know, when you start looking at scenes and go, oh, okay, this looks like a TV show now.
I'm very curious, how hard was that process? Because here's the thing, for me, I know some of the stories. Like, we've even talked about the story about when you were putting up, you know, flyers for our band and the cop, you know, threw you to the ground and everything. And it's a lot like what you do see in the pilot. But I remember you were saying it was a white friend of yours that ran over to the cops and was like screaming, yelling at them. But I don't remember you saying he was your roommate.
It was my roommate, but he was coming off a bus and he came right across the street. So, yeah, I mean, I think different things happened in the writing room. Things changed because of whether, you know, whether we had access to, you know, we didn't shoot in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. We had time constraints. We had money constraints. We had, you know, there were just different things that changed. And I mean, that's the thing with any type of art, right? It's not just about the stuff that you have, but it's also the stuff that you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And the obstacles that are placed in front of you. So one of the interesting things about shooting in Vancouver, we shot it in January and February, is it like broke records as far as precipitation goes.
Oh my God.
It like rained or snowed 30 out of the 32 days or something we shot. And so, there were outdoor shots. There were scenes that were meant for outdoors that we had to shoot indoors. Mm. And those turned out to be the most interesting scenes because we had to change things up and do something different. And so they just turned out to be really interesting. Coming up with how the animation was going to manifest itself in certain scenes, you know. One of the interesting things is watching, which I really love to see, is a Black People for Rent t-shirt sort of do its thing. You
that
know?
Was decidedly, yo, I was like, oh my God, if Keith could do this in real life, he probably would. And then be standing there at a con, at convention, with the shirt, like what?
but it was just fun to be able to sit there and sketch out like what the letters of what kind of face it would make. Mm-hmm. And then to like give it to the animators and then they make it work. You know, it was just really, I just loved that type of aspect of it, of just having an idea and watching it become, you know, just something that was just greater than what you had imagined, you know, way better than you ever thought it was. And that's what it seemed to be with all the creative people there, is taking an idea I had and then making it just so much more interesting.
I was actually also surprised because for me, I've always known you as woke. But this show really does feel like your origin story, because the Keith that we first meet, it is not woke. I think that's what Ayana is kind of looking at. I'm like, oh, you don't get what's actually happening here. Did you yourself go through that drastic of, like, obviously police brutality brings with it a whole heap of trauma, and we will touch on that. But did you yourself really, before that incident, go, you know, I'm just a dude out here just drawing stuff, man. You know, I'm just an average dude. I don't want to talk about my ethnicity or my race.
No. That's really, I mean, basically, we had to take a 30-year journey
in about 10 minutes.
Into 8 episodes. Yeah. So I knew sort of, like, if there's criticism to bring to the character, it's like, why didn't he know the stuff before? He does know the stuff before, but for it to hit so viscerally, where it's just like, because, I mean, you do sort of live in a bubble, in a sense that, you know, and San Francisco was one of those places where it's like, oh, everything's cool and fun and hip until something, you know, something jarring like that happened. So I was doing these cartoons for a long time before when the incident happened to me. So in real life, it wasn't that. It just made me double down even more. As it was happening, I was like, oh my God, this is the thing I read about. And now I'm in it right now, you know?
Yeah.
But with series, the characters have to go on an arc, right? They have to go on a journey. So it was like, if there was anything that we could do with this character, it's that. It's to have, you know, he's in San Francisco, he's protested, he's done all this different stuff, but for it to actually happen to him, and honestly, like, when it did happen to me, it is a surprise, like, when it comes down. I knew that it happened, but, like, for it to especially where I was, because I was at the edge of Golden Gate Park, just hanging up posters, you know? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you turn around, and a police officer is behind you. It's like, where did you even come from?
The great thing about it, though, is, and about this show, is that it's showing, I have not seen this black man on TV before. I haven't. There has been the black friend. There's been the black friend with the white girlfriend. There has been but they have been tangential. They haven't been a fleshed out character. So what's interesting is this is actually fascinating. It is the whole crew is sort of, you know, college educated, middle class, you know, folks living in San Francisco, making a life for themselves as artists. I don't know about Clovis. Clovis is making his life, but just like just like Keith said, though, Keith in the show says to Clovis, like, I expected something like this to happen to you, not me. And that's that's real, because that's a discussion that I think that is happening in black communities right now, who, for people who are protesting police brutality, and people who turn around and was like, well, you've never had a problem with police. It's like, but that's not the point. This shouldn't happen. You know?
Yeah.
And I think it's so interesting. It looked different when you started working on the scripts and co-writing. It looked different when you saw it on screen. And now it looks different dropping in the middle of 2020 in this historic time. What does that feel like, looking at your story through those sort of three different lenses?
I feel like you haven't really seen that on TV, which is, you could say the white dude's black friend, like that friend is now front and center. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like it was an extension of what I do, mm-hmm. which is, when I first started the Keith Chronicles, I was like, you know, how come every time they show someone who's into hip hop, like they're in a gang or they're in, you know, this is the early 90s.
Yeah.
So how come I'm not seeing anybody like me and my friends, like in the media? So it was important for me to create this comic book about someone who was into hip hop, but who was also like into politics and smart and into other music and into nerdy stuff and into, you know, in the early 90s, you just didn't see that. And so it was important for me to bring that. And I'm hoping that the same thing happens with the show, so that people haven't seen the character, this character before. And, but, the, and if they did, it was never the lead character. And so this was important for me to have this, this as the lead. And I mean, it's very subtle, but you can just see how sort of Black culture leads most of everything in the show,
mm-hmm.
In a very subtle way. So even when we used songs like, you know, I Fought the Law, like that's, you know, people always know I Fought the Law with the Clash. They associate it with that.
Yeah.
It was important for me to do, you know, to have like a Black version, a reggae version. It was important, you know, Rainy Days and Mondays, you know, it's a Carpenter song. We specifically had an R&B cover version of it in there.
Mm-hmm.
The jokes about sort of how Adrian doesn't, she doesn't understand why people go, "Yo, Adrian," right. to her. She doesn't understand.
It's not her culture.
But you know, and he says Rocky, and she's like, "Rocky? Like, what's Rocky?" And he goes, "It's the prequel to Creed." And then she's like, "Oh, Creed! I love Creed." You know, just like it's a subtle thing, but that's, I don't know. That's, to me, that's what makes me happy about the show. It's a very subtle thing. And you know, just sort of taking to task folks who think they're in a liberal bubble of, you know, like, well, we're not like the South or something like that, you know? And yeah. It's just like, no, this goes on everywhere, and like no one should think that they're better than anyone else, like as far as like, you know, this whole systemic racism thing. So it's an interesting journey to do all that we did, and sort of, you know, and hopefully, man, we're just hoping that we can get another season to sort of, you know, we're hoping that, like you said, a lot of people had a hard time grasping this because they hadn't seen it before. But we're hoping that it works well enough to get us a second season so there aren't the question marks anymore, and we can just go, you know, full throttle.
Yeah, and I also think that looking at it from my perspective, I personally think that the entire season is him, his processing of trauma. It's showing up in a bunch of different ways. He's got, you know, floating comic book characters. We've got 40. I can't go to the bodega anymore, thanks to you, because I can't look at the 40s without thinking they're going to talk to me. There's tons of these little moments, but it's all versions of him processing his trauma. When you went through the real life incident, did you immediately go and draw it? Is that how you processed it?
Yeah. See, and that's the thing that I thank God for, which is I've been able to process all this stuff for decades through my work, you know, mm-hmm. And what's going on now and what's been going on forever. I can't imagine not having something like this to process it through, you know?
Yeah.
I would go completely insane. And I mean, I think that's what happens is people act out in different ways if they don't have a place to sort of channel that energy. And so for me, yeah, my slideshows that I do I don't do it around the country anymore. I do it virtually, but just, yeah, my virtual slideshows on America's racial literacy, where I just sort of rant about everything that they don't teach us about systemic racism, you know, and how just how we need to be equipped. Like, if we know this stuff, then we're better able to deal with it. I think is that's part of my process. Like, that's part of, I feel like that's what I'm here to do, which mm-hmm. is equipping Black people with the tools to deal with all this BS. I just hope I leave this planet equipping my kids with the tools to deal at a much younger age, to deal with the BS that they got to deal with growing up in this country. And I will feel like my work is complete, but that I hope they can learn through all my comic strips, all the slideshow stuff and stuff like the TV show is all just a part of it.
Yeah. And I think that's also really important just to touch on, because I think a lot of people will look at not realizing how the trauma affects everything. Like, his trauma affected his relationship. Like, he felt he could not go to his girlfriend and say what had happened to him and discuss it. Now, that might have been because of who she was, but she was confused. Like, why wouldn't you talk to me? And I think that's very interesting. And then the person that he was able to confide in doesn't know much about what's going on in this country and doesn't know, is not from, did not grow up with the American ethos. She's not just white. She's Australian. So it's a completely different view for him. But by then he's still processing and he's still having trouble being in a relationship. So it's interesting how, and then obviously, his friends. But I think that is something that is not talked about. I mean, in the Black community, we don't talk about trauma. We don't go to therapy. And then if we do go to therapy, we might see a therapist that doesn't understand our history or think that we're playing a victim. So then your even therapy isn't helping.
Yeah. If there's any advice I would give to young Black folks who want to pursue something, a career, it would be in mental health. And I feel like we need therapists who look like us, mm-hmm. who've experienced what we've experienced, and to have people that we can talk to, because it's insane to watch the news. It's insane to see someone like Macklemore beat out Kendrick Lamar for best hip hop album. That's traumatizing. That's really traumatizing,
Or Adele beat out Beyonce. Like, come on.
Yeah, exactly. with Adele, and she'll admit it's like her third best album,
Or Ben Affleck's brother beat out Denzel Washington.
Yeah, yeah. we're just watching mediocre white men host late night television next to a far more talented Black band leader who's not only funny, but is a great musician,
Yeah.
It's like you see that on every show and you're just like, really? So we see it in everything. in everything. The NBA logo. Why do I have to look at a white man in the NBA logo?
All of the side characters, Ayana and Clovis and Gunther. You've already explained that you did have an actual white roommate, so I'm assuming that's who Gunther is based on.
They're all amalgamation of different people. So, there are no real particular people that they're based on. I did have one Black roommate and one white roommate when the thing happened with the police and all that stuff, but they're not they're not based on them. You know, I remember when I first did the Gunther strip, it was really, you know, this one stoner dude was at my youth hostel, and he just kept on always asking me if I wanted to get stoned while I was behind the desk. Like, no, I didn't want to get stoned. And then when I got off the shift, I said to him, I said, hey, you want to get high? And he's like, yeah, yeah. So I took him over to this hotel in downtown San Francisco that had these great elevators that set up like 44 flights, and they were outdoor elevators. So I took him over there, and we got in there, and we started going up. And once it emerged that we were outside, he freaked out, and he like leaped against the wall. And I was like, what's the matter? And he's like, he goes, I thought we were going to get high. And I said, it was a play on words. Like, I was getting high. That character, I just thought, like, wow, that'd be a fun character to have around for all this stuff. And so that, you know, potentially became Gunther, like the regular character. So.
And I got to ask what your favorite episode and or scene is in the show.
It's hard to say what my favorite episodes are, but yeah, there are favorite scenes that I have, and they're all for different reasons. You know, I really like the scene in the pilot with Clovis and Keith when they find the wallet,
mm-hmm.
because that was the first scene that I think I wrote where I was like, oh, I can write for television. Because it really establishes the two characters
it
really
does.
Well in one scene.
And when Clovis threw it, I yelled. Like, I yelled out loud when he threw it. It was so funny.
Yeah. And that was, we shot that on a street. First of all, you know, we changed the name of my character to Keith, K-E-E-F. Mm-hmm. We shot that on a street called Kiefer Street, mm-hmm. K-E-E-F-E-R. And the bus that went on that street was called the Night Bus, K-N-I-G-H-T.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, so that scene, like, is this weird kind of like, oh, my goodness, like, there were no accidents. This is all meant to be. So that one was a really enjoyable scene. And I like the scene where the N-word game, where Cypress Hill mm-hmm, comes on, mm-hmm. and they're all trying to guess who's going to say the N-word first.
In the bar, yeah.
And then, like, Sashim is just amazing throughout the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Just the way she just brought it so good. So there are scenes. I think the scene with her and Clovis when he buys her mm-hmm. shoes. And she accuses him of lurking on her Instagram.
Yes.
and just a couple where she's like kicking Keith out of the office of the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's really good. But and all of them. And Adrian, when she first comes out of Keith's bedroom, like, I was like, I want her to do the opposite of a walk of shame, you know? So I want to just walk right out and just grab a piece of toast, you know, walk right up to these dudes, doesn't know, grab a piece of toast, take a bite out of it and walk up, you know, like those things. When you see it come to life, you're just like, yeah, that's what I want. That's what I want. But also I have a very special scene, which is in episode 7, when the koala knocks Lamorne out, that's me in that koala costume.
Is it really?
I am the koala. I am the koala.
That's amazing. So you are in this show.
Yes, that's the secret Easter egg. But I just remember when I was throwing that punch.
That's hysterical.
I heard someone say, I don't think he's ever thrown a punch in his life.
Oh, wow.
That was What was your favorite episode or favorite scene?
Okay, my favorite episode was 6. And I'll tell you why. I feel like 6, everybody had to confront their demons. And they had to, like, they all kind of had to do it sitting down. I mean, Gunther got to do it laying down, but I think they all had to have these conversations and real ones. And it was nice seeing nobody shy away from it. Because, like, many times in comedies, the real serious situation is supposed to happen, and it just happens in a one line or in a look, and then the joke happens and the scene is over. But every single, Keith and Adrian, even Clovis and Ayana, and then, of course, Gunther and his 2 new friends, all had to have conversations. And it was also very funny how at the end of the scene they all ended up watching TV together, except for Ayana. But the roommates were, were there. That's my favorite episode. Favorite scene? I don't know, man. That's a toss-up because you named, like, a bunch of them. Like, when Clovis throws the wallet. And I also really like how Ayana, because that thing with Clovis confronting her about the shoes, I have been that person. Like, I have literally been at a convention and somebody's come up to me and been like, here, I got you this thing. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, yeah, you said on Instagram that you like this. And I'm like, that is creepy. That is very, very creepy.
Excellent. I mean, not excellent, yes. But I mean, yeah, like, I'm glad that, like, it rings true in a sense, and that it's, it is creepy.
Thank you so much for talking to me about the show. Thank you. I'm happy for you. I was thrilled when I heard you were working on this. I was thrilled when I heard you were working with Maurice. Years and years and years ago, I edited a couple commercials for Maurice. So that's actually how I know him, back from my post-production days.
Yeah, he's
good. Amazing.
He's amazing.
And I really do hope you get a second season, because it would be very interesting to see where all these characters land, because Keith at the beginning of the show is not the same Keith at the end. And
I really
would like to see what this next Keith does next. So, again, thank you so much. I really appreciate you talking to me.
Oh, it's an honor. And it's great. And I I'm just psyched that you dig it. And I hope a lot of folks dig it.
Really think you all should check out the show, because I want to hear what you think. Now, as usual, if you like this episode, please comment and subscribe over on iTunes. And if you really liked it, please screenshot this episode and tag me in a post over on Instagram stories telling me what you think. And if you love this episode, please contribute to my coffee page. I'll put the link in the show notes. Next week, I will sit down with the host of HBO's official Lovecraft Country podcast, one of whom writes for the show, and discuss all the episodes further, including episode 4. So make sure you watch episode 5 of Lovecraft Country this weekend, and make sure you check out DC Fandom tomorrow to see my interview about the brand new Nubia comic. See you next week, folks.